recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
And welcome in FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty with you on this Monday night. Ian Blair on the board and on the microphone. That's how it works around here. We have three microphones in this studio and three people filling those microphones and a whole lot of sports to talk about on this sports night. Corey, Ian, how you guys doing today?
Too blessed to be stressed, my brother. Plenty going on for us to talk about within this packed hour. It goes by so fast.
Yeah, and thank you to both of you for filling in last Monday night as I actually took a real vacation for the first time in a very long time, and actually the first family vacation for the little Erwig family, my wife, myself, and my little bitty daughter. So we went to Jacksonville. We figured not too far of a drive, no planes involved. Plenty of stuff to take a little kid around to in Jacksonville, and I'd never been. So went out to Jacksonville. I listened to a little bit from last week's show, and thank you guys both for filling in for me. But you know what we have this week that we did not have and that you did not have last week is MAF, Monday Afternoon Football.
True.
What a weird year this has been. I mean, just a couple months ago, we had NHL games, NBA games all day long, playoff games. It started at like 11 in the morning. And baseball playing at the same time, and then college football got ramped up. And it's just been such a strange year with so many different condensed schedules. And then now you add in what the SEC has started to see over these last couple of weeks, moving games. And that's what the NFL has had to do also. And so now we're getting something I never thought we'd have, which is a 4 p.m. kickoff for a Monday night football game and a Monday night football doubleheader. And right now the Chiefs and Bills getting it done on Monday night football. Just a strange year all the way around.
Flexibility is the key word if you are watching sports, if you play sports, and this is from youth sports all the way up into the professional ranks, Dalton. I mean, you've seen COVID changes constantly on a week-to-week basis, and I think you'll continue to see it. And unfortunately, I think that one of these major sporting events will be postponed, whether it's the Super Bowl, whether it's the national championship game. I just think that COVID's going to bump something.
Yeah, I get that strong feeling too, and flexibility, a great word for you to use, and it's flexibility all across the board. It's from the very top with organizations, whether you're talking about the NCAA and then the conferences that fall underneath the NCAA or the NFL or MLB, all the way down to the teams, and we're about to do the new Associated Press Top 25 poll. And I think this year, being flexible and being adaptive is probably the most important trait that a team or a player can have in this kind of year. But with talk of events being postponed, I started wondering this last week or about 2 weeks ago with the NFL. You know, they had all these precautions built in place for COVID-19, and they made all these rules for the teams to follow, and then they had their first major outbreak, and that was with the Tennessee Titans. And it's so funny, so many people out there, fans, critics of the sport who might have been truthers, mask truthers. They think that, you know, wearing masks doesn't work and COVID-19 is a big operation or whatever. And then those same people, when they feel that their football team is being wronged by another team, you should have seen the vitriol pointed towards the Tennessee Titans. And people were so sure that they had done everything incorrectly and they were the reason that this was shut down. Not the fact that there's a pandemic that's going around and affecting literally everyone, but they wanted the NFL to punish the Titans more than any team's been punished before. And Adam Schefter coming out this afternoon and saying, listen, the review is done. The NFL has looked. There may have been some slip-ups, guys not wearing their masks when they weren't supposed to, but they're going to fine the organization maybe. No forfeits, no forfeiture of draft picks or anything like that. But why didn't the NFL build in extra bye weeks into this season? That's what this main thought for me was. They planned this ahead like they were going to have a 17-week season with a bye for each team and then roll right into the playoffs. Didn't even give a thought to putting an 18th or a 19th week in there, and that's starting to come back at them because with that Titans cancellation and postponement, that pushed the Buffalo Bills-Tennessee Titans game to last Tuesday, and then this game that's being played right now between the Chiefs and Bills was supposed to be played yesterday and was moved until today. So just, I think, a little bit of poor planning from the NFL. That's one thing the SEC, I think, did correctly. Now, did they build enough bye weeks into the SEC season is the next question, because we saw the first major changes to the schedule this last week, and that's with two games that did not go off, and they've now had to reschedule, and those bye weeks they built in are starting to fill up pretty quickly.
And see, that's what I said months ago, Dalton, about 2.5-3 months ago. I felt that you had to shorten the SEC schedule to where you had an opportunity to have at least a week between each game played. And if you had a week between each game played, and then you build in toward the end, you just were going to have to shorten the season, period. And teams that are able to get in 8 plus 4 or 10 plus your conference championship plus the playoffs, you know, that's just tough to do, and the margin for error starts to shrink. And that's exactly what you've seen, not only now in the SEC. There's no more pushback dates. There's just none available, because now everything, unless you're starting to play two games in a week, that's the only way you're going to get these games in.
Because the next move is to either start canceling games, which it's fine if it's a Vanderbilt, I don't know, I can't say Arkansas anymore because they could be fighting for the SEC championship at the end of the year. If it's Vanderbilt, Missouri, who cares if that game, I mean, Vanderbilt wouldn't care. Missouri might care if that game's canceled. But if you're talking about an Alabama, LSU game, that game has to be played because there are so many ramifications. So what's the next move then? You either start canceling games or you start to push back the SEC championship game from that date, which was already pushed back. It's December 19th now. If they push that back, college football playoff selection is set for the following day. So I could totally see, like you said, some big-time events getting postponed later this year because of positives or, as we saw this weekend, possibly false positives on teams that caused the league to push things back. Now, I talked about the anger that was directed towards the Tennessee Titans last week.
Wow.
And the Bama fans saw a little bit of that themselves this last weekend. And the big news at the end of last week, Nick Saban has caught COVID-19. Nick Saban has tested positive for COVID-19, and they already had the statement that Steve Sarkisian was going to coach the game. What do you know? Nick Saban has 3 negative tests over the next 3 days. I guess was the final, did they determine it was a false positive? Is that what they decided? And Saban's out there coaching, and I think the big difference maker in that win over Georgia, just like so many Alabama wins, was the presence of Nick Saban on the sideline. But I'm sure you saw that this weekend too. People are placing their anger directly at either their opponents or someone when, remember, this is a pandemic that's affecting everyone.
And you have to look at this, and I know that there are the naysayers out there who are upset that Nick Saban came back, but Nick Saban has been an advocate for proper COVID protocol, whether it's social distancing or masking up, but also zero positive COVID test for the Alabama football team, who is tested on a daily basis. So with that being said, you had to know, with Saban being in proximity to all his assistant coaches as well as his players, even though he had his mask on, if there was a true positive test, that someone else outside of athletic director Greg Byrne, and nobody's talked about Greg Byrne testing positive for COVID, that was tremendously overlooked by everyone, and to this day it's still being overlooked. You don't even hear his name mentioned.
Yeah, did we find out if his was also a false positive?
And I have not heard, Dalton. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. In the stories I've seen, I would love if any of our listeners or diehard Alabama fans out there have heard about whether Greg Byrne was a false positive also. I have not heard.
Yeah, so Nick Saban makes his way back out to the sideline, and then all the posts, I'm just so sick of this new age, and I guess I'm part of it, being on Twitter and being on Facebook, but the people that just love trashing and wanting someone else to throw the book at someone. They just love to see other people punished. Now listen, I'm not an Alabama fan. I'm a Tennessee fan when it comes down to it, but a fan of good football, and I've come to respect Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide football team over the years. But to act like this was some kind of, you know, special treatment or something like that, it was just a false positive, and people need to get over it. And Alabama ends up winning that massive matchup between number 2 ranked Crimson Tide and the then number 3 ranked Georgia Bulldogs. Let's go through the AP Top 25 poll here really quickly, and then we'll get into some of these SEC games after the break. But Clemson still on top after that record-setting win over Georgia Tech over the weekend. Most biggest point differential in an ACC game ever, I believe. And Clemson receives 54 of 62 first-place votes. They take the top spot in the poll for the seventh week in a row. Alabama now the only undefeated team remaining in the SEC after beating Georgia 41-24. They received 8 first-place votes for their effort, but they remain ranked second behind the Tigers. Notre Dame has moved up to number 3 in the latest poll. That's even with the tight win over Louisville on Saturday. Georgia only falls one spot to number 4. Ohio State, who opens their season against Nebraska this weekend, 5th. Oklahoma State, 6th. Texas A&M making some moves. They're up to number 7 after beating Mississippi State. Penn State, 8th. Cincinnati, 9th. And Florida, 10th. Auburn and Tennessee both fall out of the top 25 poll. And that's where we'll take it this next segment. Talk a little bit about that Alabama win over Georgia. And, oh man, what's going on the plains? Is everyone okay with Bo Nix or Gus Malzahn? We'll talk about that when we get back right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names, you're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair with you on this, I'll go ahead and say it. Perfect Monday night. Maybe not perfect. I know that the temperatures last week that we had here in Mobile, and I wasn't here for it. I think last week we had perfect weather. A little hot right now, but we're heading back down into an acceptable degree range for me. So weather looking a lot better out there, and thank God we're just about a month out from the end of hurricane season. And hopefully no more hurricanes come into our area, and hopefully no more hurricanes mess with the SEC schedule, which we talked quite a bit about in that first segment. But I was going through the top 25, and, you know, after this weekend, with Auburn losing to South Carolina and Tennessee losing badly at home to Kentucky, and both of those teams falling out of the top 25, I can't remember a time where the SEC had fewer ranked teams than they have right now. You've got 4 teams: Alabama, number 2, Georgia, 4, Texas A&M, 7, and Florida, 10. After that, no more SEC teams in the top 25 rankings. The ACC now has the most ranked teams with 6. Big Ten, who hasn't even stepped on the field yet, has 5 ranked teams. SEC with 4, Big 12 with 3, and then the Pac-12, who also has not stepped on the field, has 2 ranked teams.
You know, that I cannot disagree more with the fact that without playing a football game, you're already in the top 25. And that's just based off name and tradition. And I want to see what these teams are made of this week because they're starting to play one another. But the SEC, we know by the end of the season, they beat up on each other so much, but nobody saw Auburn's epic collapse coming. Nobody really saw the fact that you have SEC teams that are not able to play, like Florida this past week. Nobody saw LSU's epic collapse so far. We knew that they graduated a lot of players, but we expected them to stay in the top 25 along with Auburn. So I just, when you're starting to play from top to bottom, the type of competition that the SEC plays, it doesn't surprise me because, again, there's always SEC fatigue. But you did have maybe 6 or 7 programs in the top 25 as of last week.
Yeah, and I guess having these cupcake teams, or at least out-of-conference games, may be a lot of the reason why the SEC has always had so many ranked teams, because like you said, I mean, only one undefeated team left in the SEC. Now, it's not surprising that Alabama is the lone undefeated team, but if we were 4 weeks into a normal regular season, I'd have to think there'd be, what, at least 4 undefeated SEC teams at this time of year, and it's just not the case because it's either the best or next best conference in the entire nation, and we're already seeing the teams playing each other and giving each other losses. So that's what we're seeing in the SEC so far this year. And before we get into that Bama-Georgia game, I do want to shout out the Florida State fans that are out there. I've compared Florida State to Tennessee often, with I think Florida State kind of taking a similar approach to the rebuild as the Tennessee Volunteers did a decade ago, and I kind of thought that's what Florida State was going through here over these last couple of years. But a huge win for Florida State, knocked off number 5 ranked North Carolina, took a 31-7 halftime lead, and just about lost that entire lead. Now, So strange to see the Tar Heels come in as 13.5-point favorites in that game. But they almost had the comeback, and the Seminoles ended up holding on 31-28 and winning the biggest game in Tallahassee in quite a while, in a long time. So big win for Florida State, and that knocked UNC, I think, from 5th down to about 13th in the latest AP Top 25 poll. Meanwhile, in the SEC, two games canceled this weekend due to COVID-19, LSU-Florida and Missouri-Vanderbilt. I said canceled. Really, they were postponed and pushed back until later in the season, and that's what we were talking about, the first time the SEC has really had to take a long look at the schedule and move some parts around. But the most important game of the weekend, number 2-ranked Bama and number 3-ranked Georgia, did go off, and both coaches were on the sidelines, and Alabama ends up winning 41-27. Now, Corey, going in, this battle was all about Georgia's elite, some people throwing around the word legendary defense. I know only three games into the season at that point, but the elite Georgia defense versus the elite, possibly legendary Alabama offense. And by the end of the night, I think we know who won that little matchup.
Well, it was a situation to where when you start off the game and Alabama comes out and scores the first touchdown, you're like, okay, the pedal's going to be to the metal. And then Georgia was able to answer that, and you're like, okay. And then Georgia scores 17 points in the second quarter, and you're starting to wonder, is Alabama starting to have the miscues? But you knew that they would be fixed at halftime. And you knew that with Nick Saban actually being there, that he was going to be that difference maker, Dalton. I tell you what was huge. When you start looking at that 1 second left and the momentum off of Alabama making their first 50-plus yard field goal since 2016. Since 2016, they make their first 50-plus yard field goal. Will Reichert, an outstanding kicker that if he's healthy last year, Alabama would have had a dominant kicker because this young man can kick the football. I saw him at Hoover High School. You see him when he was healthy the first couple of weeks last year. You've seen him in films, in highlights, kick the ball 65 to 70 yards through the uprights. So you know he can do it. But that momentum going into halftime was tremendous for Alabama because you look at, I mean, I saw every Alabama player on the sidelines go up and give this man a hug and a high five.
You're right. Well, he deserved it. And sneaking that kick in just inside that left post there at the end of the halftime, or at the end of the first half, we talk so often about the middle eight and how important that is in not just college ball or pro ball, high school ball as well, the final 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of the second half. Now, Bama had the ball coming out in the second half and put together a really nice long drive. That drive did end without any points. But going into halftime, the Tide scored 10 points there in the final 3 minutes of the first half. Now, Georgia also added a touchdown, but think of how much differently this game would have looked if Bama had not put up those 10 points in the final 4 minutes of that half.
I mean, Dalton, to me, again, that momentum that you have going into the start of the third quarter and being able to outscore Georgia 21-0 in the second half is huge. And you start talking about this Georgia defense, Alabama just started wearing on them because you know the explosiveness that the wide receivers have for Alabama. This is known. I mean, three deep at wide receiver. And you're looking at running back. Alabama's definitely two deep from the running back position. But anytime Alabama gets that lead and now you're down by 10 or more, you know Alabama's defense is going to feed off of the momentum sooner or later from that offense. And I tell you, Najee Harris, again, rushing for 152 yards with one touchdown and ultimately 147 yards on the ground against the nation's number one defense. Mm-hmm. You can see late in the fourth quarter, I think Scott Cochran should have been the strength and conditioning coach for Georgia instead of the special teams coach because that's another guy that, you know, that matchup, I was looking forward to him returning to Tuscaloosa, and you really didn't hear a lot about that. But at the same time, again, Alabama showed why they are truly, if not the best, definitely the second best team in the country.
Well, you know, the talk after the game was deservedly pointed towards the excellence of Mac Jones and the three top Alabama receivers, and heck, we can add Forrestall in there if we want to at tight end. But I think Najee Harris, how can you be underrated with over 150 yards rushing? That is the balance that you absolutely have to have when you're facing a team like the Georgia Bulldogs and the ability to put a game away late. Now, I think, you know, we talked about the scores going into halftime for Alabama, but the biggest turning point obviously came towards the end of the third quarter. Bama still down by 4 points, 24-20. And, you know, they put together a nice drive starting the second half. Didn't get any points out of that. I think Georgia returned with a nice drive. No points out of that either. But then you head into the very end of the third quarter, and Bama gets the ball on their own 10-yard line. And then something we've seen so often over the last couple of years, a small, shifty Bama wide receiver gets loose, and Jaylen Waddle's, his defender falls down on the play, and he's gone for 90 yards. That puts Bama up 27-24, and you're thinking, all right, we're back in. There's a slugfest now. This is going to be a great game, and it already was at that point with the two teams battling back and forth. But then after that, the most crucial drive of the game, Georgia gets the ball back, down 3 points, and actually put together a really, really nice drive, and it all comes apart back on the Alabama goal line with a tipped interception that goes Alabama's way. Next thing you know, after that drive, Najee Harris plowing in a 2-yard touchdown run, and there you have it, Alabama up by 10 points and the biggest difference maker in the game by far right there at the end of the third quarter. And then that's where Najee Harris comes into play, and they just keep pounding the rock with him to end the game and score again towards the middle of the fourth quarter, and a 41-24 final is what you have with Alabama coming out on top.
The dominance again in the second half and the adjustments that were made are evident. The separation between Georgia and Alabama is evident. And Georgia fans, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer for that rematch.
Well, we know Alabama has multiple options at wide receiver. Auburn apparently does not. And we saw what happens when you don't have anybody outside your number one. Let's talk about that Auburn game when we get back right here on Sports Night.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey Labounty with you. He and Blair doing an excellent job on the board. And, man, what a great win for South Alabama this weekend. Their first win at the Hancock Whitney Bank Stadium. We'll talk about that here in just a little bit. And I want to go in depth on, the latest tragedy from the plains with Auburn falling to South Carolina. And I'd like to say I didn't see that one coming, but check the college pick'em. I did take South Carolina over Auburn. Just had a feeling that this would be Will Muschamp's weekend, and it certainly turned out to be the case. But I wanted to go over a couple stats with you real quick, Corey, from Alabama, just because it's amazing that this is the offense we're seeing now from Alabama. And if you would have told me that this is what they would look like 10 years ago, I wouldn't have believed you at all. But the offense is just so amazing right now. And really no one's standing in their way in the SEC the rest of the way. There could be a team that, like Ole Miss did just a couple weeks ago, put some scare into them. But when you look at the conference as a whole, I think Georgia really is the best bet at beating Alabama. And I would have told you Florida earlier this year, but some of what I'm seeing from Florida's defense really has me worried about them facing anybody with a potent offense at all. But Bama has had such an amazing carryover from Tua Tagovailoa to Mac Jones. And now Mac Jones is setting records that people didn't think he'd set. So broke his own record in this game against Georgia, became the first tied quarterback to throw for 400 yards in three consecutive games. And then in this game on Saturday, Jones finished with the most passing yards with 417, the most yards per attempt at 13, the highest completion percentage at 75%, and the best overall passer rating, 219.5, of any opposing quarterback with more than 10 attempts against Georgia in more than a decade. He played the best game at quarterback that's been played against Georgia in over a decade.
It's unbelievable when you start talking about the history of Alabama football, especially when you're talking about Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa, two explosive quarterbacks. And, you know, Mac Jones, he's high as Mac right now. He's high as Mac Jones because he is putting up just ungodly numbers in regards to week in and week out and being consistent. And he showed that at the end of last year, and it has continued over. And I love the young man's swagger.
Well, let me ask both of you a question. Ian, you can get in on this too. If you had to rank the four Tide players right now that I would say should be involved in the Heisman talks, of course, Mac Jones, Najee Harris, and then pick one, I don't know, Jaylen Waddle or Devontae Smith. How would you rank those four right now as far as Heisman odds? Who do you think deserves the Heisman at this point of those four players? Because right now, really, the national conversation is still Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, And Mac Jones is into that conversation now. But how would you rank those four Tide players who I think deserve to be mentioned in the Heisman talks?
Right now, for Heisman hopeful, I have to go Mac Jones one because he's the one delivering the mail. He's the one putting the ball on the money to these guys. Secondly, I'm going to go, at this point in time, I'm going to go Devontae Smith.
Mm.
And third, I'm going to go Najee Harris. And then fourth, I'll go Jaylen Waddle.
Interesting. Smith over Waddle. Very interesting. Ian, who do you like there?
Well, at the same time, I would disagree with Corey's take on Devontae Smith being number two versus Mac Jones. I'd ultimately argue that, and I argued this last week as well, is that the quarterback typically is going to be the one stuffing the stat sheet the most. And if you have good stats, you're going to be watched for the Heisman. That's just how it is. Specifically, if you are running a D1 offense like Mac Jones is, with the efficiency that he is, I mean, I'm sitting there watching that game, and it's just one zip after another. I didn't see a single difference between the way he was throwing and the way that we've seen people like Tua, A.J. McCarron, Greg McElroy all the way back in 2010, you know? So Mac, I would put Mac at number one. I would follow up with Devontae Smith at number three, not number two, because I feel like Najee Harris took over the game against Georgia, and he shows up a bit more against tougher defenses than Devontae does, and then I put Waddle at the four.
Very interesting. I will say I have noticed the one difference in Mac Jones and some of the guys you mentioned. A lot of his balls, and he had, 417 yards passing. Not a lot you can criticize with that, but seems to underthrow some of the deep balls. Maybe just not enough on that arm, which could come back to bite him, but when you have receivers like he has, who cares? Because they're coming back for the ball regardless. So the only other stat I wanted to share here from Alabama, you take Devontae Smith, Jaylen Waddle, and now the third, which is literally John Metchie the third. They are averaging collectively now 18 yards per catch with 11 touchdowns, and between the three of them, 21 plays of over 20 yards per play. That's more than any SEC team. We're talking about three players, three receivers who are averaging just unbelievable numbers. So I expect that to continue. I don't think the Alabama's offense is going to take a step back at all. We'll have to see whether the defense could take a step forward, and maybe we saw some of that on Saturday.
The biggest thing as a fan and watching Alabama play, you almost get mad when Alabama does not score on every possession because you know they have that type of explosiveness, whether it's Najee busting the big run by the big old line or whether it's Mac Jones throwing the ball on the money. You get mad when Alabama has to punt the football because you know that for three play calls, you did not call or dial up the right play. And that's a situation now to where Bama fans are going to continue to feel that way because of the explosiveness that they have.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, go from talking about the good with Alabama to the bad with the Auburn Tigers. And a lot of people saw this writing on the wall. Actually, four College Game Day hosts picked South Carolina to beat Auburn on Saturday. And, you know, if you just look at the stat sheet and you use a little bit of wideout to cover up the turnovers part of the stat sheet, Auburn should have won this game. Mm-hmm. I think most people will tell you Auburn, for the most part, outside of turnovers, played better than South Carolina did. But Gus Malzahn, again, in the hot seat and in the crosshairs of so many Auburn fans, and he talked after the game, said disappointed in penalties, said, you know, I always think that's coaching. That starts with me. We've got to do a better job in that area. But he is really, you know, he's taking the criticism there. He's saying it all starts with me, which is what a head coach is supposed to do. But that's what will be used against Gus and what's been used against so many other coaches that have been let go. Yeah, it starts with you. And now the Auburn Tigers are 2-2 in a season that they entered with national championship aspirations. And the championship, you can go ahead and that is long off the table. They're not going to play for the SEC championship. Now they've just, like so many years in the past, you look at some of the big games remaining on their schedule, most importantly, the Iron Bowl game, and could it be another year where Auburn surprises Alabama and Gus Malzahn keeps his job? It just, you know, cycle and repeat for Auburn fans right now.
I mean, the penalties, 9 for 89 for Auburn. But I think more importantly, again, is the offensive stability because you score the first touchdown and you start chasing the two-point conversion on the road. And that's a very gutsy call only being made by the head coach in that situation. You have to know that you're going to get it because you have a very good, decent kicker in Carlson who can kick the extra points with no problem.
Yeah.
So, and won a game for you a couple of weeks ago against Arkansas. So with the strong start, Auburn getting out to 9-0. You're starting to worry about the defensive leadership. Where is the defensive leadership coming from vocally? Because KJ Britt, when he goes out, I know Ian and I talked about the leadership of KJ Britt last week. With him being hurt now, you just don't see that type of leadership in Auburn's defense. And for them to turn the corner, it's going to have to be with them rushing the football, because we know Tank is going to get the football.
Yes.
We know you have to find, whether it's special teams, whether it's all-purpose yards, no matter what it is, Tank has to have his yardage. And if he doesn't get that, Auburn struggles.
Well, you hit it right there. Their offense should be based off of their run game. Enough with the Bo Nix, Chad Morris aspirations that you have, that you're going to run four wide or five wide and just bomb it down the field, because that's not going to happen. And you're looking at the answer right now in the backfield, a five-star true freshman who's coming in and doing some amazing things with the ball. I would say, and you're right, KJ Britt, big-time leader of the defense, and there were certainly some runs up the middle that South Carolina had that I don't think they would have had as much success with if KJ Britt had been in the game. But this wasn't a defensive problem for Auburn this game. They truly outgained South Carolina by nearly double. I mean, the Gamecocks finished with 297 yards total. This was all about turnovers, and unfortunately for Bo Nix, this was all about how Bo Nix has just not progressed. I mean, 17 games now into the collegiate career of Bo Nix, where do you think he stands?
I think that he has not regressed. I think Cole Kublik said it best today, that he's just right where he started as a freshman. I mean, I just don't think that you've seen what you expected to see out of Bo Nix. Three interceptions on the road is definitely not going to get it done. If they would have won, there would have been a little bit, there would have been smoke. And where there's smoke, there's fire. But I don't know if you're looking to go to a backup, putting Bo on the bench. No, I just think you have to settle them down and find a way to get the running game going,
yep,
which sets up the passing
You've
game.
Absolutely got to run the ball. And it was the three interceptions that did them in, because South Carolina had only one drive all day that was longer than 60 yards. They scored all three of those turnovers in the Auburn end of the field, and that was the huge difference maker. But Bo Nix throws the ball 31 times in just over one half of the game. And you have Tank Bigsby, who by far has the most yards after contact in the SEC already. I don't know why they want so badly to be this spread offense team with a quarterback that's just not proven to this point. And if anything, he's proven that he shouldn't have the weight of the game placed on his shoulders.
You better get Bo Nix and Seth Williams on the same page very quickly.
And, shout out to J.C. Horn, the South Carolina cornerback, who just covered up Seth Williams all day, all night long. That's Joe Horn's son, by the way, former New Orleans Saints wide receiver. The cell phone dance. J.C. Horn had a big game against Auburn. And South Alabama had a big game on Saturday. We'll talk about that when we get back right here on Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. Coming up next, Sweet Home Canabama with Jennifer Boozer. And I want to get into this South Alabama win here in just a second. But first, let's look ahead, Corey, to the lines for this coming week. Week 5 in the SEC now. It'll be week 1 in the Big 10. Interested to see how all of that works out. But, man, does Ohio State already have that road paved clear, wide open for them to make it into the playoff? But that's not important right now. Let's talk about some SEC and opening lines. You have Auburn playing at Ole Miss, both teams coming off losses that they feel they should not have lost. And Auburn actually opened as 6-point favorites in this one, have already been bet down to 3.5-point favorites over Ole Miss. Now, I could definitely see this as a bounce-back situation for Auburn and expect them to go out and beat Ole Miss, but the only way they're going to do that is if they rely more on Tank Bigsby. And, you know, at this point, Corey, if you lose to Ole Miss or Mississippi State and they throw the ball all over the field on you, that's your own fault now as a coach, because there is a clear way to beat these teams, that the Mike Leach team and the Lane Kiffin team, that has been shown over these last few weeks, and that's just rush 3, maybe 4, put everybody else, hopefully 8, 7 if that's what you got to work with, put them back and put them in zone and then make these quarterbacks with iffy offensive lines beat you. KJ Costello with Mississippi State has proven he can't do that, and now so have Ole Miss with Corral and Reese Plumlee. So I don't see how Auburn could screw that up, but I'm sure Auburn fans out there are saying, yeah, believe it or not, we will find a way to screw that up. So Auburn favored by 3.5 over Ole Miss. Alabama playing at Tennessee was the third Saturday in October, and I believe now they are playing on the fourth Saturday in October. Alabama only opened to 17-point favorites. They've been bet up to 21-point favorites. And as someone who watches every single Tennessee Vols game and watched the atrocious quarterback play from Tennessee this last weekend and the loss to Kentucky, Alabama fans, you have absolutely nothing to worry about this week. 21 points seems low to me because we know Alabama's going to score points. I don't see how Tennessee's going to score any points.
Who's going to start at quarterback?
Well, do you want my honest answer?
I do.
Jarrett Garantano is going to get the start again here against Alabama. They're not going to put a freshman in. They're not going to put any of the other scrubs that are playing quarterback for Tennessee in. Jeremy Pruitt made his bed at the beginning of the season. He said, we've only got enough time for reps for one or two quarterbacks. He gave Garantano the majority of those reps, and now they're seeing that Garantano is exactly who he's been the last 3-4 years. And there's just no offense. Now, they might make the move, and they did very, very late in the Kentucky game and brought in the 5-star freshman quarterback that everyone in Knoxville has been raving about, Harrison Bailey, who had absolutely no prep time. He did no training camp or anything like that. He came in late and was awful. He was not good. He may have practiced handing the ball off the times that he was practicing, but I don't think he'll get the start against Alabama, but he might be in by the second quarter, depending on how Garantano's playing.
I think it's just a matter of how much pressure can Alabama get on him, and if they get enough pressure on him and are able to create turnovers, or Tennessee's unable to score and Alabama's able to get up 14 or 15 or 21 real quick, I think that you will see that swap, because now you're moving forward if you're Tennessee. But I like the point spread on that one, and Alabama should win by at least 2 touchdowns. And how many years in a row is that now, Dalton?
I think 14. Is that going to be 14?
It's close to 14.
I quit keeping count after 10. And I'm ready for all the memes. You know, last time Tennessee beat Alabama, there was no such thing as an iPhone. Taylor Swift was 8 years old. You know, all the different memes that are coming out this week. And I can't wait for my buddy Sean Sullivan to play the I Hate Tennessee video.
The pumpkin puke.
Yeah, that video comes around once every year. And then Tennessee loses to Alabama every time. So I think this is going to be a Bryce Young game. Second half Bryce Young game for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Kentucky playing at Missouri. Kentucky 5.5-point favorites. I expect Kentucky to win that one. Their defense is just looking so strong. And if Missouri can't stop the run, then there's no stopping Kentucky. And you also have South Carolina playing at LSU. Now, this is interesting. LSU 6.5-point favorites over a really excited South Carolina team that just got a win against Auburn. This is one of those traps here. If you're somebody that looks at the odds and you say, how could LSU possibly be favored by 6.5 points? They've looked so bad this year. Miles Brennan might not even play, the starting quarterback for LSU. This has LSU win written all over it. And I'm not saying that based on any of the play they've had this year, either team. I'm just saying, when you see odds that are like that, you can go ahead and bank that LSU deserves those odds for one reason or another.
Well, I like the game being in the Valley, and I think that that's the biggest difference, even though it didn't make a difference in the first game against Mississippi State. But the poor performance that LSU is coming off of, and especially not being able to play this past week, I like the LSU.
Yeah, in Florida, they were set to play, I think, Missouri. That game's been rescheduled, and then you had four teams on a bye this week in the SEC. So a really light SEC schedule here in week five. And South Alabama, they're back on the field. They won. Beat Texas State 30-20, first win ever at Hancock-Whitney Bank Stadium. And that's after 23 days off. It had been 23 days since South lost to UAB at that same stadium, Hancock-Whitney, right here in Mobile. And then we had the COVID-19 tests. They postponed the game against Troy. Then they already had a scheduled bye the following week. So it's tough to come back after 23 days off. But the word of the day for South Alabama on Saturday was balance. Mm-hmm. They finally got some balance on offense. Carlos Davis rushed for a career-high 113 yards, and the Jags finished with 132 yards rushing. Now, only 2.8 yards per play, but that's better than what they've gotten any of the other weeks of this season. And then passing-wise, had both quarterbacks in once again, but it was mostly a Desmond Trotter game here on Saturday. And as a whole, between he and Chase Levertich, they finished with 253 yards and 2 touchdowns. Trotter threw for 187 of those yards, and then the most important touchdown of the game, an 8-yarder to Kawan Baker in the fourth quarter. But a big win for the South Alabama Jaguars.
One that was desperately needed, and again, Jalen Wayne and Jalen Tolbert, big-time wide receiving threats. And you know Baker, the touchdown maker, even though he did have a touchdown in that game, you just like to see South Alabama go ahead and get that first win at Hancock-Whitney. And congratulations to Coach Campbell and the South Alabama Jaguars, moving in the right direction, especially off of that long layover.
And what a game for Jags senior linebacker Riley Cole.
Yeah.
Led the team with 15 tackles, had 1.5 tackles for loss, and then for his efforts was named Sun Belt Conference Defensive Player of the Week, and I believe the first time he's won that award. So by far the best player on defense for South.
I know as the spotter for the PA announcer, I was telling Paul, look, I was calling Ford's name every time. I mean, because he was in on special teams making tackles, defense making tackles, was a difference maker.
Big time, big time. And then, of course, last night, some sadness if you're an Atlanta Braves fan. Mm. They go up 3-1 in the National League Championship Series. It looks like it's all but over for the LA Dodgers, and the Atlanta Braves would be heading to the World Series for the first time in over 20 years. And then 3 wins back-to-back-to-back for LA, 3 nights in a row, and now the Dodgers heading to the World Series. Last night, LA's Cody Bellinger with a 7th-inning solo home run for the eventual game winner. But you look at this LA Dodgers team, and it's all about the bats for them. 16 home runs in the championship series, and I know they're favored to beat the Tampa Bay Rays in this World Series. And game one tomorrow night, you have Kershaw starting for the Dodgers, who had an awful game against Atlanta, like we've seen from so many of his postseason games, and Tyler Glasnow for the Rays. But just the bats on that LA Dodgers team, and we saw it once pitching got thin for the Atlanta Braves. Once they get on a roll, they're on a roll. And you could say the same for the Atlanta offensive lineup, but for the LA Dodgers, I think their bats are just swinging right and at the right time, and I think they'll probably win it against the Tampa Bay Rays this week, but that's why they play the game.
Yeah, I've got the Dodgers favored too, and I know the Atlanta Braves fans are absolutely sick. But again, to be noted, this game will be played in Arlington, Texas, the entire World Series, and that's something that's making 2020-2020.
Yeah, and they've been playing those games with the roof open. Lots of wind, a really long ballpark, and Tampa Bay hasn't been playing in there. The LA Dodgers have, so I think that'll be notable as well. And that does it. Another episode of Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Check me out, Mobile Morning 6 to 9 every morning, and Corey Labounty on Prep Sports Report 8 to 10 Saturday mornings. We'll check in with y'all next week.